Welcome to Key to IP, the show where intellectual property experts take a deep dive into innovation and intangible assets, discussing recent news and trends from the world of IP. I'm your host, Riz Skinner, and this episode promises to be very entertaining as we explore the intricate and sometimes dramatic role of IP in the entertainment industry. Joining me today, two accomplished legal minds, Olivier Lombardo, Head of Trademarks Luxembourg at Denemeyer & Associates, and Giovanni Orsoni, Trademark Attorney at De Simone, Denemeyer Associates, Rome. A very warm welcome to you both. So Giovanni, you actually are in Rome at this very moment?
Yes, I am, indeed.
Oh, lovely. And Olivier, you should be, if I remember correctly, maybe sitting in the office at Hovald?
Yes, in the office, but I'm heading in a few minutes to the stadium. No, next game to comment. Because, yeah, I do have two jobs.
Yes. So it's great to have you here to discuss this captivating topic. But first, I'd like to get to know a little more about you, Olivier. I've heard you have an enviable background in sports media. Would you like to share some of that with our listeners?
Sure, Russ, and thanks for invitation. Well, an enviable background, I don't know. But we can certainly say that I have a quite untypical career as a lawyer. Although everything started pretty streamlined with, you know, a couple of experiences in law firms and at the European Patent Office. But the kickoff was kind of full of surprise. And after a couple of years, I've been active in the entertainment industry. I was producing documentaries for the television. But not only that, I was also engaged in sport media. And I was so lucky to do live commentaries of football games in French. And believe me, for the true football fan that I am, to comment the most exciting games of the UEFA Champions League, European Cup, and even the FIFA World Cup, that was a thrill for me.
Yeah, I can honestly understand that completely. And I must say, you have a voice made for podcasting. So can you give us a little goal in French?
A little goal? Okay. Well, that's a challenge, right, to start with. Okay, but in French, right?
Yes, in French.
Okay, so, alors, c'est parti avec ce premier ballon pour Russ Skinner qui passe pour Lombardo. Lombardo sur le côté gauche qui temporise. Attention à l'accélération, le crochet se centre directement sur la tête d'Orsoni et ça fait but!
Ouais,
but de Signore Giovanni Orsoni! Magnifique action collective menée d'une main de maître et qui n'a laissé aucune chance à la défense adverse. Et voilà, 2 minutes de jeu et déjà 1-0 pour Denemeyer. There you go.
Nice.
You ask for it, and Giovanni is our top scorer today.
You made me want to stand up and just sort of like, yeah.
Yeah, well, you told me you're not a football fan, but yeah.
You don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone.
Sorry. So, yeah, well, just to a little parenthesis, yeah, to mention, because while I was listening to myself, actually, I would say that football game is not that different to a court action. Yeah, there is a lot of parallels that can be made, because if we look at it, a successful court case is also all about teamwork. You know, you have your teammates or colleagues preparing the grounds. Then together you try to argue and find the cracks in the counterpart's defense. So, and all that runs under the control of the referee or judge, let's say it, yeah, who at the end of the game designates the winner. So pretty similar.
Very true. So what a way to kick things off. Giovanni, coming from Italy, do you have strong feelings about football as well?
Thanks for inviting me and also for this tricky question to start with. I do strongly support Italy when the national is playing. Actually, if it is playing, I'd rather say in the latest years at the World Cup, Italy was definitely not up to the usual standards, unfortunately. Anyway, I love Olivier's metaphor, and I think it applies to sailing as well, my favorite sport here, to the teams, to the boats, that are your tools to be prepared and refined in advance as legal knowledge needed to battle in courts. You have to take into account also the wind, which is the last minute variable to be tackled with promptness and improvisation.
But you also have a strong interest in the arts and culture side of entertainment. Tell us a little about that.
Yes, I do indeed. I grew up in Venice, where the first international film festival was ideated in 1932. And I regularly attend the Mostra del Cinema there. This year at its 18th edition. And recently I supported my wife, who curated a pavilion for a Croatian artist at the Venice Art Biennale, which is an even older event, dating back to 1895. Personally, as a young practitioner in London, my first foray in IP was with international copyright law, the most fascinating course during my Master in Laws, held by late Professor Adrian Sterling. And I keep practicing these aspects of IP with clients who are producers for theatrical shows, artists, and writers. Copyright law has so many peculiarities and small differences amongst jurisdictions that make it very fascinating, I have to say.
Yeah. So let's get the ball rolling with you, Olivier. And I can't promise there won't be more football puns, but when most people think about intellectual property in the entertainment world, the first things that come to mind are probably franchises and copyrights. How justified is this notion?
When people think about IP protections in entertainment, in reality, they are discussing a variety of overlapping intellectual property rights. Certainly, copyright is the most obvious one, but you also have other rights like the publicity rights, trademarks, or even design rights. And ultimately, deciding on the most suitable protection will mainly depend on the industry itself and also on the commercial perspective of the created content. So, let's take, for instance, media content producers of all kinds. Could be series producer, movie producer, but also YouTubers, TikTokers, and so on. For these, copyright is for sure the number one protection means, as lots of their creation is author-based, and it is definitely an easy and inexpensive solution for them. Like, let's say a producer has the feeling that its production as what it takes to generate derivated business through merchandising or to become a profitable franchise, then in this case, trademark protection plays the bigger role as it enables them to protect various valuable assets such as their movie names, character names, and even some taglines. I mean, we never said at the end of a conversation, "May the force be with you," right?
I'll be back.
Yeah, you know that, Ruth. So it's about trademark, but not only that. I mean, you can also think at design protection for iconic props, vehicles, or items used in this production, such as, well, we talked about Star Wars, so a stormtrooper's attire, yeah, is definitely protectable. Fifth Element Silo Cap, Thor's armor, plenty of things are protectable as long as the business justifies it. So yes, copyright plays the most evident role, but trademarks in protecting entertainment brands can be understated, especially when it comes to legacy properties. Don't you agree, Giovanni?
Yeah, I would indeed. Trademarks have always been used by media companies to safeguard their names, logos, and other branding assets. But lately, we have seen a new strategy. As we all know, copyrights inevitably expire. Under the Berne Convention, a minimum period of 50 years after the first publication of the author's death is set for non-photographic works. But in many of the largest entertainment economies, such as the United States, this term is 70 years. Now, that might sound like a long time in showbiz, and it is, but for some of the most established portfolios, it is a true deadline. Most famously, Mickey Mouse's first appearance in Steamboat Willie is set to enter the public domain in October next year. Anticipating the gradual loss of heritage copyrights, Disney has set about trademarking the various incarnations of its most valuable characters, including those of Mickey Mouse. After all, a properly maintained trademark is functionally eternal.
Yes, but if that's the case, why not trademark characters to begin with?
Yeah, that is a fair point. And of course, it is always an option. Ultimately, it comes down to budget concerns and chosen IP strategy. If merchandising is a road to be taken, and these days it often is, trademarking the likenesses of fictional characters is a must. Going back to Mickey Mouse briefly, retail sales of licensed products have generated billions of dollars for Disney, whereas the revenue directly sourced from film and television amounts to a sliver in comparison, still in the hundreds of millions, mind you.
So would you say, Olivier, that the entertainment sector is adapting to get more out of the IP system?
I think so. Entertainment companies, typically, they do have sophisticated legal wings. We know how to leverage existing IP protection with the latest technological developments in order to reach maximum benefit. And let's take the NFTs as an example. It was clearly identified pretty early as a new source of revenue. And it was extremely convenient because the system itself, which is based on the blockchain technology, it offers by nature or guarantees a unique and traceable protection over one creation. So quite naturally, entertainment company rushed into that and have proposed all kinds of NFTs on the market. Same applies to also the virtual goods, all the virtual goods that are now proposed for sale on the metaverse. Here again, an opportunity was identified. Trademark protection was easily extendable to virtual goods, and here you go for another cash machine. So, well, I have plenty of good examples like that, but I can also tune it down a little because now not all technology offers this ideal combination of easy protection for high revenues. And the most obvious and most recent example is with artificial intelligence, where it is quite the opposite. Namely, if you look at generative AI, and you might know it, it uses existing creator contents to generate new inspired content. But that means, for the original content owner, a potential loss of revenues on their creations. But even worse, that means also that they are probably witnessing now the arrival of millions of potential rights infringers too.
That's very, very true. Yeah. And how do you see IP laws adapting to the rapid pace of innovation and our changing habits when it comes to consuming media?
Legislators, they usually played catch-up with evolving media technologies, but they really are trying their best to be more proactive today. They are absolutely conscious that they can't wait too long to frame the latest innovation, or it can really have devastating effects on the creative and innovative industries. So we are witnessing an acceleration now in setting up new laws and regulation with all kind of working groups trying to anticipate the legal challenges of the future. But, and this is the reality, the legal machinery is still not as reactive as we need it. And really, disruptive innovation hit the market at a more regular and always shorter pace intervals, which challenge again and again the legal stability.
On that note, Giovanni, do you see the IP landscape getting more complex as different jurisdictions respond independently to shifts in the entertainment industry? Or do you think the result will be greater harmonization?
The intellectual property landscape has indeed become increasingly complex, mainly due to rapid technological advancements, e-commerce and digital content distribution. Yes, despite the acceleration Olivier rightly mentioned, more often than not, you still have a feeling that legal regulations take forever to respond and adapt to innovations. And surely, in some cases, different jurisdictions respond independently to these changes, leading to variation in IP laws and regulations across countries. Nonetheless, harmonization is a guiding principle that permeated IP law at least since the 19th century. I will say, starting with the most notable international treaties and agreements that aim to establish minimum standards for the protection of IP rights globally, such as the Berne Convention, the WIPO Copyright Treaty, the TRIPS Agreement, up until very recently with the entry into force of a unitary patent across most of the EU states. Personally, I'm a strong believer and supporter of such ongoing global efforts to foster greater harmonization to the benefit of facilitating international trade and cultural exchanges. But at the same time, I realize that it's not at all an easy or completely achievable task. And this is true for many aspects of international relations, given the rightful differences in cultural norms, legal tradition, and economic priorities of different countries. In conclusion, I believe that while harmonization is a noble ideal, it is more a process than a goal. Or if you want, the goalposts are moving ones. And so in the meantime, as professionals are here to guide the clients through the complexities of a global IPA landscape. And for me, it's especially true for professionals like us that work in different jurisdictions, but a close-knit team. And we are in the best position to assist clients in many industries, including the entertainment one, which operate on a global scale, necessitating cross-border collaboration and enforcement practices.
Well, a huge thank you to my guests, Olivier Lombardo and Giovanni Orsoni. But before the final whistle, there's just time for one last play. What was the registered trademark you've seen that made you think, damn, I wish I had thought of that? Olivier, do you want to start?
Yes. So we were talking earlier with Giovanni about merchandising, franchising, and series like Game of Thrones or the Marvel movies with their unique universe are obvious candidates for that. But what about the Forrest Gump movie?
Yeah, no, I do agree. I know where you're getting at. Yeah.
Yeah, it's certainly not the most obvious movie to create a merchandising imperium. But guess what? You can find now franchise Booba Gump shrimp restaurants and a huge choice of Booba Gump derivated products like cookbooks, mugs, tumblers, ping pong paddles, babies, t-shirts, you name it. And of course, well, for me, one of the iconic items, the Booba Gump red cap that I'm wearing from time to time. So who would have seen that coming? Not me.
You know what I want to know now, because I'm a foodie. Have you eaten there yet? Have you actually been to one? The restaurant, the Booba Gump ones?
Yes, I've been there.
Was it good?
I have to be honest. You know, I'm French, yeah? And you're
oh, you yeah, sorry. Okay. On the other side.
Okay, fine.
Okay, Giovanni, let's go over to you.
We have friends over in America too, so yes, that was a good shrimp restaurant.
Oh, good.
There is one in Venice Beach, Los Angeles, but I just saw it from the outside and I didn't go in.
Okay.
So I can't attest, but yeah, it's a good initiative indeed. For me, the first example that came to my mind is actually the one that since I was young fascinated me so much, I would say up to the point to influence my decision to become an IP lawyer, is the Apple trademark. Because in its simplicity and exactly because of it being a symbol far removed from the products of a technology company, was immediately recognizable and memorable and became so deeply ingrained in our popular culture. And it made a funny appearance also in the wonderful movie Olivier just cited when Forrest Gump, investing Booba Gump money, bought some shares of some kind of fruit company.
I remember that.
Yeah. That was a great one.
Yeah, very funny. Another one I surely admire is the Ferrari logo with its prancing horse symbol. And few people know the design was originally created by Francesco Baracca, an Italian flying ace during World War I, as an insignia to be displayed on his airplane. And the Baracca family later gave Enzo Ferrari permission to use the design, which appeared first on Scuderia Ferrari racing cars in 1932. And today, of course, it is not only a representation of luxury sports car, but also a symbol of speed, power, wealth.
I did not know that. Never heard that before.
Yeah, it's a nice story about the origin. How a trademark can be passed over, licensed, or given for free in that case. And yeah, of course, these trademarks have not only captured the market share, but have also become integral parts of our cultural fabric because they showcase the power of effective branding and marketing in establishing a strong presence in the market.
Well, thank you both. I think we're just about running out of time. It's been a very, very interesting and funny and lots of laughter recording of this podcast. I hope you had a great time. I hope you'll be back.
Oh, yeah, anytime.
We had them. Thanks. And thank you for this very good experience.
Oh, great. Great. I'm glad everybody could share their knowledge. And as always, we appreciate all our listeners for tuning in. So head on over to go.denemeyer.com/keytoIP to check out our previous podcasts. And we'll be back soon. I'll be back with more exciting discussions on the fascinating world of intellectual property. This has been Key to IP, IP behind the entertainment industry. Until next time, stay curious and keep innovating.